Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. As we all know, the United States is the only country in the entire world that has mass incarceration, and also among other countries with a high rate of human rights, civil rights violations. I always reiterate the fact that prisoners should not be stereotyped, as all cases vary in circumstances, and all situations have more than one side to a story. In the case we will hear in a few minutes of one injustice done to an innocent person, I want to welcome our special guest today, Judy Pickens, a wrongfully convicted woman from Missouri. Judy has been on with us in the past one time, and we'd like to hear from her again. And also with her, I want to welcome a longtime prisoner advocate and friend for the wrongfully convicted. Madeline Michelle Carthen is a prison chaplain, and she's also been a strong advocate for the wrongfully convicted individuals. So I want to welcome the two of them because criminal justice reform in the United States is long overdue, and our guests will discuss why and where it needs to start. So let's welcome Madeline Carthen and also Judy Pickens. Madeline, are you on with us?
I am. Thank you. And I was able to get Judy on time. They were able to connect me with her, so she's on the line as well. I want to thank everyone for being able to be on the call today. It was a long time in the process of getting Judy to be able to be set up for this call. So I won't take a lot of this time. I'll go ahead and turn it over to Judy Pickens today, what she's going to be speaking on in regards to the wrongful conviction that she has endured for the last 16 years in regards to the case that she will now be able to explain to the viewers that's on the call. She also, to my understanding, have a very few people that will be calling in today as well. You'll see on your end, Leona, and I don't know if there will be a time for Q&As, but Judy does have an hour time that she's allotted. Judy, you there?
We want to welcome Judy. And again, yes, Madeline, anyone that wants to ask any questions or whatever they want to say, feel free to bring them on. So, Judy, we want to welcome you on, and we're going to leave the stage for you at this point in time. Thank you, and welcome again.
Thank you, Ms. Brandiel and Ms. Carson. I do thank you all both and your listening audience for taking the time to hear our situation. As it has been stated before, my name is Judy Pickens. I am currently in the Chillicothe Correctional Center in Missouri. I have been incarcerated for 16 years for a crime that I did not commit. It is so bogged down and so complicated, but I'm going to do my best today to try to give you an understanding of what has happened to not only me, but as well as to my family. In 2004, my two children, Michael Pickens and Kimada Pickens, they got sick like any kid does. And we thought that they might just have had a flu bug or a virus or something to that effect. And so we didn't think anything about it. You know, you treat it like you would treat anything else. You give them Pedialyte, you know, if they need Tylenol, et cetera. When they weren't getting any better, we called the pediatrician who said, well, if they're not better in a day or two, bring them in and I'll take a look at them. Well, it was like anything. They would get well for a little while, like an hour, and then maybe they wouldn't be well at all, you know, from throwing up to a little bit of diarrhea. So we took them in. She thought it was a stomach flu, told me to push fluids and, you know, give them Jell-O and things like that, common sense things that we all grew up taking or consuming. And so that's what my husband and I both did, you know, when we weren't able to be with them at certain points of the time that they were sick at home, we would leave them with my mother or with several church members who came from our, who we belonged to in the same church at Trinity. And so on this particular time, I believe it was the 3rd or the 4th of October, they were just not getting any better. They just was, you know, I was uncomfortable. My husband was uncomfortable, and we just thought maybe we need to take them back to the doctor. So we took them back to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, you know what, because of the diarrhea and the mild vomiting, I'm afraid of them getting dehydrated, so I'm going to send you on over to Children's Hospital ER just to have them look at them and get them hydrated. And so we went straight from there, and to know where our doctor's office is It's literally across the street and behind Children's Hospital. You could walk there. So we got in our car, my husband and I, with our two kids, and we drove across the street, found a parking space, and went into the ER. That's just how close we were. And they got the kids. They put them, you know, did their vitals, did their assessments that they do in any ER. And Kimato was better than Michael. And it could have been because he was younger, as we would be later told, and it was getting him hard to consume anything. So they would give him, like, popsicles and stuff like that just to get him hydrated. He was so dehydrated that from the vomiting and so forth that they had to try one to give him an IV, but that would be later. They sent us home, got them hydrated, said, okay, this is going to be something that's going to have to run 3 or 4 days. It's going to take a little while, but we have an online nurse that you can call here at the ER if you have any questions. So we took them home, and like anything, they seemed like once they got home in their own element, they seemed to be doing a little bit better. But within like a couple of hours, Michael didn't want to drink anything. He just didn't want to consume anything, and Kimata was not really feeling herself as well. She kept saying her stomach hurt. So I called the online nurse and at Children's Hospital, and she basically told us, well, try to get him to consume anything, like put a little milk on a spoon or give them a little tippet water. One time I think she said something about white soda, anything like that to kind of help them settle their stomachs. And if you still feel uncomfortable in about an hour, bring them back. So we waited 2 hours, and we brought them back. And when we brought them back this time, Dr. Schmidt met us there, their doctor, and she felt it best to just go ahead on and admit them, get them there, get them on IVs, fluids, because they were young and just thought maybe that would help to flush their system or whatever it was. And it seemed to be working. But on one evening, Michael, he became kind of almost lethargic in the hospital. And one of the young ladies there that would later be a witness for us, she was a phlebotomist there. She noticed that when the nurse was pushing something in Michael's IV line, that it was crystallizing. Now, I didn't notice it. And so she happens to be a member of our church as well. She said, Ma, she said, what is that in his line? So I was so tired from being up and down all night that I said, I don't know. So she got up and she went. She was actually at work at the time. She got up and she went and she looked at it and she asked the nurse. And the nurse says, oh, it's just sometimes that happens. She tried to flush it with something in like a clear, I would later find out would be like saline. She tried to flush it. Michael moaned like it might have been burning him or hurting him. And so I said, hey, what are you doing? And she said, sometimes that happens. She said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to pull the whole rig. So she pulled everything off the pole. She took everything off of him. She threw it in the trash. She went out there and said she ordered him another one. But they couldn't get a vein because by this time he's not getting any fluids in. So they couldn't get a vein, so they called LifeLight nurse to come in to try to find a vein because they apparently can hit the vein anywhere. They wanted to put something in his stomach where they could, you know, administer fluids and things of that nature. And we were like, okay. At this point, we were just scared because we were frightened because you just don't know, you know, this was a stomach flu or a virus or whatever it is. So it was progressing very quickly. And their excuses to me was he's young, he's small, and so, you know, his body just can't handle it. Kimata's was bouncing back. She was doing good. And so the nurse came over and she gave her some medicine. And or gave her something. I still don't know, and I tried to figure out what it was. I don't know if it was Tylenol or what it was, but then she became a little lethargic. And so I thought, maybe they're allergic to whatever this is you're giving them. So we talked to the doctor, and the doctor began to ask us about, like, what could they have been exposed to? Like, sometimes if you have leftover food in the refrigerator, that was one of his scenarios. Could it have been something bad, like they ate something that had expired or spoiled or whatever, and they went down that checklist? And I said, well, all they had was chicken, so I can't imagine why, you know, when they originally got sick, we all ate it and everybody didn't get sick. So I don't think it was a chicken. And so, but the chicken had been in the refrigerator a couple of days. But again, we all ate it, so I didn't think it was that. And so then they went back and Dr. Schmidt said, well, let me try something else. And so she began to try different things to try to help Michael. And so he began to settle, and they got an IV in him, and he was doing better. It would be later on that night when my son looked over at me, and I was sitting on the side next to Kimada, and he was across the room. And he looked over at me, and I looked at him, and I said, go to sleep, baby, like that. And he said, Mommy, I'm tired. And I said, okay. And he said, I want to go home. And I said, okay, well, when you get better, you can go home. And then he just stopped. His eyes fixed. And so I started screaming for someone to come in. A nurse had just come in and went out. I had fallen asleep for like a few minutes, but what woke me up was him saying, Mommy. And, they came in and they put me out in the hallway. I was actually by the door looking at what they were doing. And they came in, and the doctor, he said, well, maybe he's just, he started talking to the other physician. I said, what are you talking about? What is going on? And then another nurse came in, and then they called a code. And in calling the code, they said, of course, I got hysterical, and I started calling my son. And they wheeled my daughter out the room. And I was calling Michael's name, but he wasn't answering. His eyes was open, but he was fixed. And it's an image you can never forget. It's a part of you that will never leave you. And anyway, they were trying to get him to resuscitate him. And so he took him from there to NICU, to the children's ICU. And they worked on him, and they put us in a conference room, my husband and I. And we were just waiting to hear something, and then they came back and they were saying, well, we've done all we can do, but they never would say what was going on. And so then finally my husband said, are you trying to tell me, he said, that Michael was on a machine, but he didn't have anything going on upstairs, like he technically, clinically was dead. And he called, snatched the door open, and I went right behind him. And my baby was laying there on that table. His body was warm. I'll never forget the weight of his body in my arms when the nurse put him in my arms. And I just thought he was asleep. It never dawned on me anything other than Michael was asleep. Moving forward, Kimada was still in the hospital. And she was up and down like she had been before. And they put her, because of what was happening to Michael, and they couldn't understand what was happening to him or what had happened to him, they put her in ICU, and she was, they were breathing for her for a little while, but then she turned around and increasingly got better, and she went to what they call a step-down area. And she was doing better, alert, talking, and what have you. And it was on the same floor, but just around the corner, if you will. And so Kimada would have up and downs. Like she threw up one time, and she got sick to the stomach one time. And so they were like, well, we started asking questions. Hey, what is going on? Something is not right. They brought in a disease specialist to try to see if it was some rare disease they asked us that we've been in and out of the country. So many questions, I can't even remember all of them. But the more questions we put to them, the more questions they put to us, like exotic foods, and was there anybody that had come in from out of another country? No, they did not. They were normal children in a normal household, going to daycare and school. So there was nothing abnormal. They weren't exposed to any foreigners. They weren't exposed to any foreign objects or anything like that. But the long and short of it is we got the runaround. And so the more we pressed and started asking more questions, then we were asked to leave the hospital. They said, allegedly, for full disclosure, that they thought that there was a suspicious cup, and they had put a sitter in the room. And the sitter said she thought she observed me bending down by my daughter's IV lines. when in fact that wasn't the case. They had so many wires, which she, I don't even know why they even had them on her because she didn't need them. She was sitting up talking and interacting, that when you sat anywhere near her, because the room was small, there was a bench along the wall, so everything was kind of, when people were coming in, because we had so many church and family friends coming from all over, that they would almost stumble on the wires. So my god sister Flo was pushing them over, and I said, here, let me move them. And so I kicked them, but they would move. So then I bent down to move the pole itself. That took seconds, if anything. And there was, like I said, a sitter sitting in the room. Now, the story was told two different ways. In that room, and that at the time in which this occurred, there was like 7 or 8 people. And they were very lenient with letting us have as many people that would come. We had so many people that they gave us a whole nother room where we could kind of stage up, sit and wait and take turns coming and going. And so when that happened, we were called out to the hallway and basically said, because of all the things that were going on and all the people coming and going and all the questions and so forth, that at this time they didn't really want anyone coming to visit Kimata, that we were asked to go home, and that they gave us a number to call and check on her, and which we did. We called and checked on her. And then it would be shortly thereafter when it kind of snowballed into that. We decided that our son should go. I was married before. I was married to my husband. And so his father, who is now deceased, he took him so that he wouldn't be in DFS. And until they could understand what was going on, Kimata could not come home with us. So she went with my mother-in-law. And so we were able to still visit and do all of that. No one ever conversated with us. No police ever came to our home. DFS never came to speak to us. This was in 2004. It would be 6, February 8th, when the police come to my job to talk to me. So this was a long time. Wherever there are children and elderly people, I do know that from reading and watching the news, they do not wait nor drag their feet. They move expeditiously. So it was, yes.
Okay, can I ask you some questions because we're getting in, we have an hour and a half, and
okay,
I don't want to spend every detail. What I wanted to find out, let the audience know, is your children went to the hospital, you took them to the hospital.
Yes.
And what year?
2004.
Okay, 2004, your children were in, you weren't brought in for questioning or anything until what year?
2006.
Okay, so for 2 whole years, and your daughter survived the sickness, the illness, but your son
yes.
didn't. And your daughter yes. is still active in your life.
Yes.
Okay, so all that time that your son was in there, and you brought them to the hospital because of
yes.
your serious concerns. So
yes.
Your son was in the hospital. How long before he passed away?
Michael was in the hospital about 3 days before he passed away.
Okay,
yeah.
And he passed away in 2000, what?
2004, on a Saturday morning.
Okay, he passed away 3 days later in the hospital in 2004,
yeah.
And they did not call you in for questioning or charge you with anything for 2 whole years later.
Yes. We even have an older son, Joseph, who nothing, he was fine. He had been out visiting. He'd been over his cousin's house. So nothing was going on with him or anything like that. There has never been a problem. I just want you to understand that they tried to paint it in the media like I was a single mother, degenerate, didn't have a job, didn't work, was unfit, uncouth, was lazy, basically living on welfare. Nothing further from the truth. I worked at Washington University. I was a comptroller, meaning I was the chief officer over finances. I ran pretty much the Charles F. Knight Center. Along with that, I also worked banquet jobs on the weekend. I am a pastor. An elder, a wife and a mother, a community activist, a civil rights activist. I also tutor and mentor youth as well as assist people in getting their GED. I'm a certified practicing accountant. There is the way the media painted it, it was like I was some throwaway beat deadbeat mom, and like I didn't have a husband.
And this is why I reiterate all the time with the audience, with everyone, is that prisoners should not be stereotyped because every situation is different, first of all. And also, we have racial disparity in the United States of America in the prison. And there are so many, and I know for a fact from experience myself, that prisoners, there are prisoners who were gainfully employed prior to their offenses, and these are people that actually have committed a first offense, not counting the innocent ones like yourself. But the media will portray people in a very negative way when they want to get that attention. And we look at the media just looks for any kind of garbage, and in courts as well. The courts, the prosecutors, they tamper with evidence, they bring in false witnesses. And I wanted to let you know also, there was years ago, I was in, reading about a story where it was a rare disease, but the child died in the home, in the care and custody of the parents. But they were being accused of also of doing something to their child. But it later came out that the child had some kind of rare illness that caused the death. And sometimes these things happen, and this is where I want you to focus on, to let people know about these issues of rare illnesses in areas where children are dying, but it has nothing to do with the parent.
Yes, thank you. Nice segue. That's where I was headed. They basically group it as something called Munchausen's disorder or syndrome. It's called many little names, but the end all is it primarily focuses on the woman, specifically the mother in a family unit. And when the doctors can't figure out what's going on, or they have made a mistake themselves, administered their own medicine, or they're tired of a mother coming in, bringing their kids habitually, then they will attach that term, which is not a symptom, it's not an event, it is a disease that takes years of diagnosis and study to even get a diagnosis by a trained, seasoned psychologist or psychiatrist. It is not something that you just label. Now, years ago, they used to attach it to anyone. So there were many women, specifically the systemic racism of African-American women, but not exclusively African-American women. But here of late, we've seen an uptick in that, being attached to that stigma of Munchausen, to only find out later that that's not that. In fact, they have even gone back and exhumed children's bodies to discover it was nothing of the sort, or it was an error on the hospital or even on the doctor, or as you said earlier, a disease that was undiagnosed, missed, or just overlooked. And as a result, there have been many families, such as myself, among others, who have been criminalized, if you will. The things that have been, that has happened to us, thank God we overcame it. We stayed together as a unit, nothing but the faith of God and God's hand on it. But we had to endure this. It was difficult. My children had to grow up talking to us on the phone, and we had to go over and visit at other people's homes with our children, whom we raised and loved in church. Not only that, they're successful. Joseph is a regional manager of a big sports facilities that offers gyms and so forth. This same young man brought up in a home with us, loved and cared by us, is making $100,000 a year. My daughter Kimata just graduated from college not quite 2 years ago. She lives in Texas, and she's doing excellent. And she's advancing and living in management. So this happens. And as we have studied this, we come to find out by an organization called Mamas that there are many women that this has happened to, and as a result have been incarcerated. Some of them have gotten free, but many of them have not. I'm in here right now with some of them, and they don't have anyone fighting for them. Thank God last year around my birthday, an attorney contacted my husband. He saw the atrocity in the case. He saw the injustice. He saw the miscarriage of character. He saw that I had been misused in the system, and he has been on our case ever since. So this is happening. It can happen to you. It happened to me. I never heard of the disease. I didn't even know it existed until it became prevalent in our situation when we were going to court. They didn't even have a cause. They couldn't figure out anything. They had no evidence. There was not one stitch of evidence. They presented it to the jury as could you convict them on circumstantial. The prosecutors attacked the jurors and kept going back there pressuring them to give them the decision they wanted. Now, there are laws that are supposed to protect the jurors from being coerced, pressured, or intimidated, but that did not exist in that courtroom. And you're talking about a family who's very well known in the community, who works and many advocates for many people on many fronts. This is now happening to us. It crossed what we thought would never happen. We never thought this would ever happen. So you're right, Leona. This does happen. There are so many people, both male and female, who have been wrongfully accused and falsely imprisoned. Reverend Madeline, I know you know of quite a few. She has been working and advocating for me and others to keep it present. We need to keep it known. People need to say our names and not forget us. We have lives and we have families, and we matter. Our lives matter. And it should matter to the justice system. I was reading an article in the Missouri Courier where they said that approximately 3,793 innocent and otherwise wrongfully convicted and incarcerated people in Missouri, that the state of Missouri know of them and won't release them. They have tangible evidence and won't release them. They have DNA that the judge keeps saying, I don't want to even see it. But they know of them right now. This was in the Missouri Courier, the fall and winter edition. 3,793. That's what we know of. I'm one of them. And something needs to be done about that.
Exactly. We have people from other countries that see the problem in this country with mass incarceration. And they speak often about wrongfully convicted, first-time offenders, people who have mental illnesses and addictions. These people should not even be in prison, but they keep prisons for profit. That's what it's all about. But wrongfully convicted is a major issue in the United States because there are so many people who have been wrongfully convicted and serving so many years. And I wanted to ask you, Judy, how many years did you get for this ridiculous allegation?
I got 3 life sentences.
And that in itself should prove, it should substantiate the problems that we have in the United States of America. Because people who have done nothing get sentences like that. People who have been serial killers in some cases or terrorists have gotten less sentencing. So we want to bring these issues out so that the audience will know and people will do something about it. And I hope all of you in the audience are listening to what she is saying. This isn't the first time we've heard about situations like this, and it probably won't be the last unless we do something about these issues. So, again, Judy, I want to thank you. And also, Madeline has mentioned people that may want to ask questions or have some feedback. And I'm trying to find out who in the background, because I unmuted everyone on the call, and I'm hearing distractions in the background. So if you can let me know who it is that's doing this so I can mute you, that will be good. I'm hearing noises in the background.
Yes, this is Carl Pickens.
And how are you, Carl? I remember you were on with your wife and with Madeline last time we had her on as a guest, and I welcome your answers or your questions.
Okay, thanks.
I think she's giving you the floor to comment.
No, okay. It was a couple of things that was stated. We had took the kids to the hospital 3 different times. The third time is when we told them we wasn't taking them back home because Pediatrics and Crackers wasn't doing it. We took Michael and Kimata in on a Monday. Michael passed that Saturday. And then in regards to the autopsy stuff, right after Michael passed, they did an autopsy. They said they didn't find anything. Well, come to find out, because they came after Judy about a year and a half later, that was when they picked her up, we found out at that point that they had did a total of 3, possibly 4 different autopsies on Mike.
And didn't find a thing. Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they come up with an autopsy they did, and they found something coming up was in his heart.
And I believe that we've already determined that that was a case of injustice. It was a case of something that shouldn't have happened. And we all know, in doing national work and being an advocate for over 25 years, and I'm sure Madeline can confirm this, is that we run into cases like this all the time. We know of lawyers, we know of judges, we know of DAs, district attorneys, prosecutors, who are corrupt and who are just deceitful, and they tamper with evidence, and they come up with allegations, accusations that don't even make sense. We're dealing with injustices throughout the United States of America, and that's why I started a petition on change.org to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. You would think with 2.3 million people incarcerated in the United States that there would have been more than 600 signatures. And this is sad because this is what we got in this country. A lot of people out there in the communities complaining, judging without knowing all the facts, and having loved ones inside serving unnecessary life sentences, unnecessary death penalties, yet they don't do anything. That petition is sitting out there on change.org waiting for signatures from people all over this country. This country is dysfunctional. We have a country that is not focused on justice, and they're not focused on making things right. And every country in the world is watching the United States of America and seeing the injustices going on in this country, only to have our president going to their countries trying to tell them how to run their country. We need justice in this country. We need to release the prisons. We need to release mass incarceration, and we need to let go of these wrongfully convicted. I wanted to ask you, Judy, do you have an attorney working with you on this?
Yes, we finally did get one. We've had several attorneys that have come on board. Some of them shied away because of the powerful entity of Children's Hospital. Some of them simply because it was a complicated case where they would need multiple attorneys to help them. But God sent us an angel, thank God. And he did come on board, and he has been working feverishly along with a team of other attorneys that he is in contact with to point out all the injustices. And so we're at a point where they're doing that, and they're putting together their strategy and so forth, and looking at everything. And as they have unearthed things, it boggles the mind
that
all the injustice.
I don't know who's called in with their background, but I don't like to run a show with a lot of distraction in the background. So whoever it is that has people talking in the background, has music on, has talk on or whatever, please either let me know what your number is so I can put you back on mute. And I wanted to say, sometimes it's so distracting, I forgot what I was going to say. But right now there's a lot being done around the country with prison reform, criminal justice reform, and they're looking at abolishing life without parole in some states. They're looking at abolishing life, period. They're looking at abolishing the death penalty. And so this is why I ask you if you have lawyers working with you on it, because this is an opportunity. And I wanted to find out if Barry Sheck, Innocence Project, I know you mentioned one time about them, but has anyone discussed any of that?
Thank you for giving me that into that. Yes, I contacted the Criminal Investigative Unit of Kim Gardner's office in St. Louis, Missouri, the Circuit Court Attorney, and she, their office contacted me in receipt of receiving my letter. They then sent me another letter saying, okay, we see that you have a claim. The next letter was basically saying that, okay, there are steps to this, and I had gotten past the first two so that they would be getting in contact with me, and if I had any more information, any new evidence to go along with what they already had and what they were looking into, to feel privy to give it to them, and only specifically the CIU unit. That was the last letter I got from them. So I was put on a list or put in what I thought was an ongoing investigation to look into my case, and no one ever responded back. No one ever communicated back. I wrote them back asking, hey, what has happened to the letter that we sent. You all sent me several correspondence, and I've not yet heard any more anything else from you, and still did not hear anything. We contacted the Midwest Innocent Project, completed an application as well. They also corresponded and said, okay, it looks like you have a good case here. We're going to put you on the list. We have several other people. We work on basically an in-kind kind of voluntary with limited budget, and so when we have people in the office, work is done, and when we don't, it slows down, but you will not be forgotten. Well, I have been forgotten. I don't know if Brandy called in or not, but she, my sister Brandy Somerville, contacted attorneys everywhere, both her and Carl, contacted attorneys everywhere, and we did get a hold of Mr. Daryl Anthony in Chicago with the Chicago Innocent Project, who looked at our stuff and was like, this is crazy. You should not be in prison, essentially. You know, and was helping my sister to kind of navigate through roads and to find us the help we need. But Reverend Matland has just been a lifesaver to so many of us in here because she's doing the groundwork that really attorneys should be doing. She's visiting offenders when necessary. She's talking to them. She's writing letters. She's helping them draft letters so that they can get what they're trying to say out in an informative way. She's being kind of the liaisons, if you will, between the criminal justice system and us, you know, and many of us wouldn't even have anyone because I am blessed to have my family who has been 100% behind me, my church, my community, my colleagues and associates, people I went to school with, college and high school, are very much supportive of our family, and they're there for us on both sides of the family. But I'm in here with a lot of people, and there are so many others whose families have died off because they have been incarcerated so long, wrongfully convicted. It shouldn't be hard for people to believe that anymore because Kevin Strickland is proof positive. He set 43 years in prison. They were aware, the governor on down was aware of evidence that would free him and refused boldly by state representatives and everyone else who got behind him, activists, celebrities, they refused until that Senate Bill 53 came in play where he had an opportunity and the prosecutors could bring him back in to court to present his evidence. And thank God he got free. But 43 years, you can't get that back. You, no matter what you say, you cannot give me back 16 years of my daughter's life and my son's life. And I will never know what Michael sounds like as an adult man. You know, I wasn't thinking about lawsuits or nothing. I just wanted my children to be whole and to be healthy. And now at this point, you have robbed us of all of that. And not only me, anyone else that has been falsely accused. We've been denied the right to do the things that we need to do. So we thank God for you, Ms. Brandio, and for you, Reverend Mallon, and for all the others who get out there, who pound the pavement, who make phone calls, who get on people's nerves, who hold up signs and pictures and posters, fighting for us. And there are so many others. The list goes on. I can't name them all, but there are so many. I don't miss a program that has somebody in there that's been mentioned as falsely accused. I don't, if it's something I can sign or send money, if I have to cut a green check, whatever, because I want somebody to support me like that, and so I'm going to support them. You got to sow forward in order for somebody to sow into you. And I want people out there to realize it can happen to them.
Yeah, I just, I'm glad you said that because I wanted to bring that up. I just got an email yesterday from a fellow advocate in Massachusetts whose brother has been in prison all these years that died yesterday. And she just got the body, the coroner's office just got the body today. But he had been in for years as well. And one of the things that I really despise is people in the communities who think that they're non accountable for a lot of things that happen, and I say this all the time. When children are born, they're not born bad. We have a country communities where people are so judgmental that rather than to try to focus on trying to find the problem to these issues, they would rather judge rather than I'm going to figure out who's in the background.
Well, as you were saying that.
Okay, Judy, hold on a second. Okay, I know that. Okay, go ahead and I have everybody on mute. I'm going to open up so Judy can speak. And Judy, let me know when you're unmuted.
Hello?
Is this Judy?
Yes, this is Judy.
Okay, I've got some people on mute. I'm trying to figure out who the background noise is coming from. Okay, go ahead, Judy. I'm sorry.
I should support the Missouri Cure for so many reasons. They, like so many other advocates, are putting our stories out there, and they're putting out information that we would otherwise not hear about it, because let's be honest, people don't want to know about it. You know, when George Floyd was killed and they had their knee on his neck and he cried out to his mother, the mere fact that we live in a society that endorses the behaviors that we have seen throughout the years, Breonna Taylor and so many others, is offensive and unbelievable that even today in 2022, we still have injustices being done such as that. People are still being wrongfully accused. People are still being wrongfully convicted. I was reading an article where the judge asked a prosecutor in the state of Missouri during a hearing for a young man, Joe Amoreen, in 2001, he asked him, he said, even if we find evidence that would suggest that this man is innocent, you actually still want me to execute him? And on court record, they have it word for word, the prosecutor, Jung, said, that is correct, Your Honor. How does he even still have a license to practice law? The judge said, if the evidence shows he's innocent, you still want him to die? And the man said, yes. These are the people that we need to be going after. We need to put the right people in office. We need to pound the pavement. It's me today. It's Kevin Strickland. It's Bertha Owens. It's Ellen Bowen. It's all these people. Frederico. It's all these people. Reginald. It's all these people that have been falsely accused. And it could be you tomorrow. It could be your mother, your grandmother, your daughter, your sister, your father. It could be your brother, your son. And this is not something the system is quick to snatch you, but they're not quick to give it up. The prosecutor who was on Kevin Strickland's case said these words. She said, we're not going to make this a habit of setting people free. You don't have the right to deny them their freedom when the evidence says that they're innocent. They don't even want to review the records. Now, I'm going to pause and let people come in with whatever they want to say, because I think I said enough, but I think you all get the gist of I'm an innocent woman. I'm 100% innocent. I 100% did not commit the crime. I love my children and my family. I love God first above all others. And no matter what, God told me I was going to be free, and I am going to be free, because I'm never going to take a deal. I'm never going to bend over. I'm going to keep on fighting until I am free and others like me.
And for the audience that wasn't aware of CURE, as Judy had mentioned, CURE is Citizens United Against Rehabilitative Parent. This is Charlie Sullivan is the founder of CURE from 1975. But for the audience, I want you to know CURE is composed of citizens around the country, and it's actually global now. But it's CURE is an organization that actually lets everyone know what's going on. They fight for the prisoners. You have to go on the internet and type in CURE, C-U-R-E, Citizens United for Rehabilitative Errands, I believe it is. But try to get involved with CURE, because they have chapters in every single state, including Massachusetts.
Yes,
another one also is the Marshall Project. I don't know if any of you are aware of the Marshall Project, but they're a nonpartisan, nonprofit news organization. And they get information out to everyone throughout the country. It's United States criminal justice system, all these things that are going on. And they have an impact through journalism and rendering transparent. They help with the transparency and accountability and humanity of all these people that are incarcerated. So that's the Marshall Project, and also the CURE International, or CURE National in this case. But I want to give some of the callers a chance to give some feedback or ask questions. We got the board is lit up here, so I'll start with 31. I'll start with 8385. Okay, 6652.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Kimberly Smith, and I wanted to say hi to Judy.
Hi, Kim.
Hey, how are you today?
Oh, I'm blessed.
That's good. I want you to stay encouraged because everything that you said is so accurate in regards to the way that the system is set up. When we talk about systemic racism, we talk about wrongful incarceration. And I just wanted to add to what you're saying because when you made reference, they have this movie out when they see us, and it talks about those young black boys in New York and how they were wrongfully accused, and the young man, Corey, never took a deal, and how the boys got together and stated that they were coerced by the police and things like that. The sad part is, like you said, we are in a new day and age, 2022, and if I don't have enough money or if I'm a person of color, I am continually brutalized by the system. When you mm-hmm. said that people should pay attention because it can happen to their loved ones, this is something that is so accurate to the point that people do need to pound the pavement, knock on doors, talk to community people, different advocates, because doors should be signing a petition to have people released, because the unfortunate part is that you're sitting in a system that is built to keep us as people of color incarcerated, to keep mm-hmm. us down. Because at the end of the day, if you were someone who had malice intent, why would you take your children to the hospital to receive any type of care? Why would exactly. you stand there continuously and advocate for the care of your children, to continuously ask questions, to have people come up? If that was the situation, you would have just discarded your children, and that's not what happened. But the sad mm-hmm. part is that the hospital is not taking accountability for whatever transpired as opposed to them to look at it from that advocate. The system itself, when we talk about the justice system, because you didn't have enough money and you That's weren't right. a white woman, mm-hmm. you were therefore then brutalized by the system. We talk about systemic racism all the time. We talk about the injustice that the system provides, because if I don't have the money and I am not a person that is not of color, then I am continuously just left behind. And that's the whole problem that we're facing now. So I don't want to be long-winded because she said there are other callers on the phone. So, yes, I back you. I pray for you because I know that there has to be a way for us to be able to show the world itself that Missouri is a state that still has a workhouse. A workhouse is something that just not even exists when people of color can't pay a nonviolent ticket or something like that and they're incarcerated. These are things that still exist in the state of Missouri, which also solidify that the justice system is not for us because it is injustice. So
that's right. Thank you.
I pray for you. I thank you for what you do for yourself and others. And I know that at some point there will be a break because God will send someone who will shed light on this so that we can advocate in a different aspect in order to release you as well as others who are sitting in there and should not even have darkened that doorstep.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, one of the things I think is wrong is that, I mean, federal prisoners, they stand a better chance of getting out a lot sooner because it's all under the discretion of the president. And with the state prisoners, it's according to the governors in each state. The problems are the same nationwide, but every state operates differently. The prisons operate differently, everything. Right now, there's an organization in Florida. It's called Society First, and they started a peaceful protest in Tallahassee, Florida, to abolish these life without parole and life sentences. What we need to do, and I encourage everyone in this country who is trying to bring about justice, is to come together and start focusing on doing something nationally to stop all of the injustices going on in this country, to stop the life sentences and life without parole sentences, whether it be for the wrongfully convicted first-time offenders, whatever the case may be. If a person is a serial killer or if it's a terrorist situation, I can see leaving people in prison. But every other country, no other country in the world has sentences beyond 25 years. No other country has life and life without parole sentences unless, as I said, act or it's a serial killer. The petition that's on change.org, and anybody can go on and type it in, replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities and professionally trained providers. because we have providers contracted with the DOC across the country who, once they become contracted, they will listen to what their superiors, and that's the prison officials, tell them to do. So there's so many people in prisons that are dying because of either psychological, medical, or spiritual. And this is why we need to come together as a nation. And I'm hoping the audience will listen to this, because it's like talking to the wind. When you continuously bring up all these, you continuously hear people complaining about the problems, and yet no one out there that talks so much and judges does anything about it. People have an opportunity.
That's because they don't believe it can happen to them. That's the problem, Leona. I'm so sorry. They don't believe it can happen to them. I didn't believe it could happen. So I think someone said hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, this is April. This is April Spencer from St. Louis, Missouri. I'm a family member of Judy's. And right now, also, I wanted to add to what Judy had said. We're in the process of letting people know by a documentary that we will be starting on the whole case, you know, going back from earlier days and how, again, like you guys have mentioned before about how society and the judicial system is not fair across the board for, first of all, women and people of color. Also, as Judy was mentioning about the sitter and the caller beforehand mentioning about the hospital not being able to uplift to what their mistakes were. You know, within the hospital system, if you are a sitter, your job is to watch that child and also the equipment that is attached to that child. Now, if the child was going down before he coded, how come any of the machines did not alarm that, you know, his blood pressure maybe have gone down or anything like that? A lot of us that have been in the hospital know this, and they take more special care with children. And the documentary,
we can go back to that situation, which is very painful for Judy. I hear it in her voice. We can keep keep going back to that, but that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to make changes right now. We're trying to get help right now. And
I do understand that, and that's part of the documentary that we will be starting to get that change and that help for Judy and people that are incarcerated with Judy, other people that she has helped along the way. The documentary will set a tone in order to get different avenues changed for incarcerated people.
And that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask at the end of the show, we're close to the end of the show, for Judy and for her husband and Madeline to let the audience know how they can connect with some of these things you're talking about. The documentary, I don't know if there's been a book written, but a book should be written on this situation, because this is a very, it's not a common situation, it's very unique. But there are a few others out there in the communities throughout the country who have been falsely accused. But these are things, and since you brought it up, why don't you all give your information to the audience now about how they can connect with you, how they can find out more about what's going on with the case, and you can do it again at the end.
Okay. You can go through change.org. And you'll find information in regards to me. It takes you right to our website. It takes you to our petition. You can go to justiceforjudypickens.com. It would be justiceforjudypickens.com, and you can go there, and it has a wealth, a fountain of information and contact information where you can log in. Catch the podcast, links to your podcast is there, and other podcasts, and the story and current up-to-date things that are happening. You can also reach out to, I think Brandy Somerville's name is on there as well. You can link on to Securus by way of encouragement and wanting to reach out to try to help and be a part of the cog in the machine, if you will. You can get onto Securus, and that's a way of emailing me. You can contact your legislator. That's most important. You can go to the polls and vote when laws come up for things like this. They're presenting modified bills, even as we speak, that will hold informants and the prosecutors under a scrutinized eye as to how they obtain these informants, alleged witnesses and the monies that are being transacted for people to give false witness, people who may be criminals themselves or turning deals. They're presenting new legislature for that so that it's not cloak and dagger. It's not hidden. It's not out of sight. You can go onto any website, specifically Missouri Cure, and you can find that information out as well. There are so many avenues. I believe Reverend Matlin has just started a business where she's helping to fund, looking for funding to help other incarcerated individuals that she has been advocating for years. There are so many ways to do that, but predominantly you can go to change.org or you can go to justiceforjudypickens.com and you can access all that information there for anyone
Judy,
out there that's listening.
We're also talking to an audience that's not aware of some of these things. So when you say go to change.org, they don't have a clue what they're going to be looking for when they go to change.org. So if you want to give this information, try to give it specifically for people that are not familiar with how to do these things. That's what
I'm
going
to defer to Reverend Madeline because I think she probably would do a better job with that.
Yeah, I was going to ask Madeline to do so. Thank you. Madeline, change.org.
Right. For anyone that's interested in Judy Pickens' information in regards to signing off, what I normally do for different prisoners who would like to gather signatures, I create change.org. I go to that particular platform, given the fact that there's millions of viewers there on that platform already. And you can just type in change.org, and in the search box, pull up Judy Pickens, J-U-D-Y-P-I-C-K-E-N-S, and you'll be able to pull right in her actual petition for signature signing. And the plan and purpose for that is to get enough signatures. Right now, she's close to 200. I'm looking to at least get 1,000 signatures. So working with her family, mainly more so her sister Brandy, once we could reach that common goal, those particular individuals would not only be supporters, would be advocates also for what next to come. Like April just mentioned, her cousin, they have a documentary that's in the works that could be able to foster some of these ideas that was talked about today. This is some of the information of where the signatures would go, and the people will be well informed once we get to that point that their information will be utilized as support for Judy to seek her release. So this is basically what change.org is used for, basically going there to be able to look at information regarding Judy's case, and there's also her website link, Judy. JusticeForJudyPickens.com is right inside of the change.org petition for anyone that could pull it up on whether they're mobile phones, laptops, tablets, or PC.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. So the change.org link is on Judy's website, on the website you have for Judy?
Yes. Well, actually,
yes, it's
Judy's
actually
website
Justice.
Is on change.org. If you go to change.org website, that's their platform, but at the top, there's a search button. All you have to do is type in the search box, Judy Pickens, and then her petition will come up, and you'll be able to read everything in that petition about her case.
I understand that, but like on our website, on New Vision Organization website, we have the link. We have actually the petition itself, So what I'm wondering is the link copied and pasted on Judy's website, and also each and every one of her family members and friends that are on with us right now, do they have it copied, do they have the link copied on their Facebook pages so that everybody that goes to their Facebook pages will see the link, will click on it, and it will bring them to the change.org petition? Because that's what we want to do.
My understanding, Leona, I am aware that her husband and sister, who I've been closely in contact with, has been very instrumental in getting the information basically transparent throughout Facebook. That's where I see a lot of their postings at. I don't know about
her
family members, but I do know that her family is a close-knit family, and that on Carl's page, a lot of them came on there to sign the petition and copy it to their pages. So I can't speak to everybody because I don't know who's all on the call, but I do know that her family is very much involved in her release.
Okay, before
I
started the show, I belong to a lot of groups, including wrongfully convicted groups on Facebook page. And before I started the show, I shared this, what we're doing right now, on these groups. And so if you can join all of these groups, then stop putting those things on there so that they can, the petitions and everything else. Once you join these groups, you can post anything you want. So I might, you know what, and Madeline, I think you belong to a lot of these groups too. So if they can post these petitions, post whatever they're, even when the documentary gets ready to come out, they can post that on with all these groups as well. And posting it to Facebook, the homepage of Facebook, which will go all over Facebook.
Thank you. Thank you. I thought I heard Brandy. I could be wrong.
Well, I was told that Brandy Somerville is on the line.
Yeah, she just stepped out. She was trying to let them know that her page is actually Justice for Judy P, not Pickens. It's Justice for Judy P.
Justice for Judy P.
Okay. So it would be the word Justice, Judy,
the number four. Uh-huh.
And then P.com. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was saying it wrong, and I gave it wrong, so I'm glad for that clarification. If she should happen to step back in, that would be great, because I know there were some things that she wanted to convey. I don't know, is there anyone else on the line that had a comment or a question that they wanted to ask before we ran out of time?
Yeah, it's me. I don't know if you can hear me. This is Brandy. Hey,
yes.
Judy.
Hi.
I was going to make that correction that Pickens did make, that it is Justice, the number four, then judyp.com. We have shared it. We do have a lot of family, extended, as well as blood family that are sharing it. We have some plans to do another push to get more signatures because we know support is important. But the main thing that I wanted to say, if you can still hear me, the main thing I wanted to say is that for everyone to know, it's bigger than Judy. You know, while we need to say her name, we need to say Judy Pickens, it's bigger than Judy. I didn't think that this would affect my sister, my family, so closely. And if you think about a person who this would never happen to, it would be Judy. So I want people listening and people who may hear about this to understand that it's no person. It's no set storyline. You know, as long as you're, you know, I hate to say it, but as long as you're African-American and female, the chances of you being in a situation of wrongful incarceration is great. And so that's what we're fighting for right now. We're fighting for the support so that my sister's story can be heard, so that it can be told, and so that she can be freed, so she can be exonerated, released from the situation. It's a travesty.
Okay.
It's unfortunate that it had to happen.
Somebody has some background distraction, washing dishes or doing whatever. Can we just keep it down? I don't know which one it is, so I can't mute. I don't want to mute everybody, and especially the one that's speaking now. Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm not washing dishes. I'm alone in a cabin. So, yeah, I was just saying that it's very important for us to get the support. I appreciate all of our supporters. Thank you, everyone, for the ones who tuned in and said some things, and the ones that are just listening on, and for the ones who are silently fighting by getting the signatures and other things. The support is really important. Getting this information out there is really important. If you notice, every time you hear the story of a new person, you say, oh, my God, I can't believe that happened. But guess what? It's happening, and it's happening by the thousands, by the tens of thousands. It's affecting our community at a great pace, and we really need to do something. We really need to, like they said, sign the signatures, talk to your politicians, your, you know, elected officials, get on these chain.org, get on these committees and these initiatives, but we need to fight back. We need to stand up, be heard, and fight back, because it is wrong. It's a serious injustice. It's not just happening to my family, but since it's happening to my family, I'm fighting even harder. So I just
want
people to know that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Really. Thank you. Next. Anyone else have anything to say? Or should we bring it back to Madeline or Judy?
Well, while I don't know if people got lost in translation somewhere, but I just wanted to reiterate that activity, being active, is imperative. We can sit around the coffee table, the water cooler, in front of our TVs in the living room, at our kitchen tables, and talk about that's horrible. But the horrible thing is doing nothing.
Yes.
I used to be a person like that. I used to be someone that would sit on the other side. I, like I said, I was a community activist. long before I even came into this prison, we walked the streets helping people, homeless people, whomever, advocating for them. And I always felt, and I'm sad to say that, but I've learned that the hard way. I used to actually believe that when they presented something on TV, that was what it was. If they said that person did it, they did it. And I believed if they went to jail, they went to jail because they did the crime. I didn't believe that they actually were innocent. I never thought an innocent person could be incarcerated. I never heard of one. Let's go there. And then when it happened to us, I was still dumbfounded, shocked, and believed that the justice system, although the scales are imbalanced, would work in my favor. I believed in the system. You never fought. I was a Republican. That's the only way to say it. I believed in the system. And then this happened. And every step that led to the length of time of me being incarcerated has only shown and perpetuated the situation even more so. It's a genocide. And so now here we are, still fighting, still singing the same song. The mere fact that people say, I never heard of Judy Pickens, or I didn't know you were still incarcerated. It's insanity that people like myself can be thrown in a system and forgotten. These judges go home, these attorneys go home, the prosecutors go home, the jurors go home, the bailiffs go home, but we never went back home. It was like we were stolen in the middle of the night. We're confused, we're dumbfounded, and we're helpless because in prison they tell you all as taxpayers that they provide us with a law library so that we could advocate for ourselves. But let me be clear. The law library is so incompetent. It's so inadequate. There is no one to assist you. You can't get the things you need. You must provide your own ink, your own typewriter, and get this, the typewriter is $500. So unless you have somebody that can help you get it, you have to buy everything just to type the paper, to type the proposal, to type the petition. So there isn't, it's not set up like people think. We pay our taxes, we provide. That is so far from the truth. You may pay your taxes, I pay them too in here because they charge me taxes, and I paid them when I was at home. It does not. There is no one in here really fighting for us, and that's why we need my sister Brandy. I just want to say this for her on her behalf, has never wavered. Her, my husband, my family have never wavered. But this girl got so motivated. She went to school, just graduated December with a criminal justice degree because of what was happening. She got aggravated. She got frustrated. She didn't get to become a couch potato. She went to school to learn the system so that she could fight the system that's been fighting us.
Praise
and
the
that's
Lord.
What we need.
I just wanted to congratulate
that's what we need. Go ahead.
I just wanted to congratulate her because that's what we all need to do. That's the only way we're going to fight the system because racial disparity again. You know, people need to get out there and do something. Get that degree. If I had the comprehension, if I could, I would have gone for my law degree. I would have gone for criminal justice. I don't have that ability, but your sister, for her to do that is a plus. And I thank you for telling us.
Yes, I am so proud of her, and I'm just so thankful of their tenacity, Reverend Madeline, who's gone through a lot of different things in her own life, but she never wavers. She is always on the computer looking up cases, finding information, giving us what we need to kind of help us, guide us in that direction. My husband, who has been steadfast like the wind, when I say that man has leaned in my direction in every capacity he has, is relentless. My family, I thank God I still have my mother and my father, and just to know that, you know, my greatest fear has always been that my parents may leave here before I get home. You know, I know it happened to so many others. Just thinking about Kevin Strickland and how his mother died not long before he went home. You know, it's too much. I can't even tell you all what it's like to be in here. It's one thing to commit a crime and go to jail. It's hard because I don't think they should suffer because they've committed a crime. Do your time and come on home. But when you're in prison and you're falsely accused, it's like 10 times worse. And then to be in prison the way I am, if it's an elderly case or a child case, you're 10 times more ostracized and criminalized and even possibly hurt. People have a tendency to want to harm you, and so you have to be mindful of your environment. And these same people who might speak against me or want to harm me or try to harm me will be the same people that later on will come and ask me to help them with their GED or to pray for them. I can't tell you how many people the people call me out to pray for or to help them write a letter or to read a letter to them or to make a call for them or to call home and try to get people out there to help them, and I'm still incarcerated. I can't tell you how many times a day I am approached, can you help me? Are you a lawyer? No, I'm not a lawyer, but if you, when you've been involved with the criminal justice system, you become a lawyer. You need to become one. You have to learn the law and learn the language of the law, and that's the problem. Many of us don't understand the language of the law. We don't understand what it means and what it's saying, and so we think we get help, but we're not. And so that's why I'm so grateful for the attorney that came forward, Pickens Mutual Fund. I can hear you. That's why we have to be mindful of the attorneys that come forward to help us. I don't have anything against the Innocent Project, but the truth of the matter is the Innocent Project has a laundry list of people on it that's been on it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years and more. So they can't be the end all. The word innocent and project sounds great. And when they take on your case or look into your stuff, it only solidifies, okay, this person, they may be innocent or they probably are innocent. But that's where it stops at. And so you can sit waiting on the process 15, 20, and 30 years, or in Kevin Strickland's case, 43. That makes no sense to me. Something has got to change. Something must change. So I don't mind being a face. I don't mind being an advocate. I'll talk to anybody. I'll talk to any news writer. It makes no difference. You spoke about a book. There is a book. I've already started it, called Silent Tears. When it's complete, it will have the full compass. As April said, they approached, she's a film producer and a filmmaker in California as well, and she has a new movie that came out, and she said, I want to do a documentary on you. At first, I was a little skeptical about that. But then when I saw the Nathaniel Woods documentary, where his two sisters are fighting because they killed him, they gassed him. I think he died by lethal injection, I'm sorry. But they killed an innocent boy they knew was not guilty. He was not even in the house. But it's in the South where racism is prevalent. He wasn't even in the house. They put that boy on death row and killed him. And even with the evidence, they just closed the case in December of last year, the federal government, with Emmett Till's mother, by her son. I'm confused about how we have proof positive that people are innocent and they are dying. And we go to sleep and we move through life until it hits our house. It's like drugs. Until the drug addiction hits your family, you can't appreciate a family that's going through it. Until someone in your family gets pulled over by an officer, killed unjustly, or go to jail for a crime they didn't commit, you can't even begin to understand. So as Ms. Brandio and Ms. Reverend Mallon and so many others, including myself, have said, it's imperative. Don't just listen to this podcast and turn the page and go to sleep or move on to the next thing or fix dinner. Subscribe to this podcast. Subscribe to those things that help us, because we need you. We can't make it without you. We need your help in every capacity. Get online. Type up wrongfully convicted. See what the crimes are. See what's happening to people. See what the laws are and what they need to be different. Contact your state representatives. Demand justice. Demand change. We're waiting on you. We're counting on you. We need you.
And I want to say, well, first of all, I want to ask you, please call me Leona. I hate formality.
Okay.
That's what this country is all about. It's about everybody wanting to be somebody. And that's what we have in our government. That's why nothing's being done, because everybody wants to please their peers. So instead of doing what they think is right as far as releasing wrongfully convicted, as far as doing something about the criminal justice reform, doing away with life, they need to start focusing on their heart, not their peers, but they want to be fitting in with their peers, and that's what we have for a government. Nobody should be serving life, especially three life sentences, for what? So this is why
I have the option of parole, but it's three life sentences consecutive, and they're 85%ed. So I'd have to complete one, then start the next.
you know, I have a problem with, and I know people are not going to agree with me, or they might get upset because I'm saying this, but I have a problem with the NAACP, and I have a problem with Black Lives Matter, and I have a problem with National Action Network, with Al Sharpton's group. You know something? They, at one time, they were doing good, but they're nowhere to be found now unless it's educational, unless it's a way to make money. But right now, especially after what happened with George Floyd, they need to start getting more involved in what's going on in these prisons. Because these are people incarcerated that have no control over what's happening in their lives. There's no way anybody, white or black or red or brown or beige, should be serving life, three life sentences. But this is the mentality of our government, because nobody lives long enough to serve one life sentence, but they want to give three. And I'll tell you, for the audience, for anybody out there that was for the death penalty for somebody that commits a fatal crime, there have been so many people who have been executed only to find out later that they were innocent. So who's held accountable for that? Very people that do it should be held accountable as well. But they don't, because they are part of the government.
I agree with that, and I just have to say that, you know, what you said is accurate and correct. There has to be accountability, and accountability starts with the individual. It starts with that person that's saying, oh, my God. It starts when the phone rings in the middle of the night. We have to get it before it topples over, because there is carnage, and the carnage is behind the bars. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
The carnage is real and it's prevalent, and so we have to be clear about that. There can be no misunderstandings about it. That this is what's happening, and there needs to be change. And I don't know what the change is going to be, but I hope to God, as you have said, that people will come forward, that they will write, that they will call. It's something that needs to be done. I don't deserve to be incarcerated. I deserve to be home with my family. My mother deserves to see her daughter. My children deserve to see me at home. I have a 7-year-old granddaughter who has seen me only incarcerated. She deserves to have her grandmama's hugs. She deserves to hear the stories of our family. My mother deserves to look over and see her daughter while she's ill and in the hospital right now. These are the things that I can do nothing about. And no matter how many times we write, people know that we're innocent. They say that's a shame, legislators and all. But nobody gets up. They pick up the ball like they're going to run with it, and then they drop it. Or they want outrageous amounts of money that if we had it, we wouldn't be in jail. That's just as simple. We wouldn't be incarcerated. So I want to reiterate, Marilyn Mellon, can you tell them about the page on Mamas so that they can go there and read about some of the stories that are like mine?
Yeah, there is an organization, actually, Judy Sister brought me into awareness of Mama. There's an organization that started here out of Tennessee, and it was due to a lady by the name of Julie Patrick. Her son, Philip Patrick, was diagnosed similar to, I guess you can really say it was inconclusive, let's put it that way, an inconclusive diagnosis, but they put it off on this man. She's in pretty much situation that Judy has gone through. And the mother, she was never incarcerated, but she was scrutinized about the lack of care for her child. And in the process of that, she was exonerated from all charges, allegations, and things of that nature. But she started this organization, Mothers Against Men Choosing by Proxy Allegations. And that website, for anyone to go look at it, is www.m, S as in Sam, B as in boy, P as in Patrick, .com. And like I said, the author of that particular website is Julie Patrick, and she basically did it out of the pain that she had to go through losing her child, Philip, and all of the allegations she had to go through dealing with doctors and psychiatrists or what have you. She started this particular nonprofit organization to help other families such as Judy's family and others. It go as far as international to the UK that she's been involved with, her organization has, shall I say, has been advocating for even mothers over there in parts of England, even so much having doctors investigated and their cases being relooked over
reviewed, so to speak, because of the wrong misdiagnosis of cases that they basically caused the mother, based on their testimony, to be incarcerated. So this is a serious matter. Like I said, I never heard of it until I met Judy over a decade ago, and just trying to understand how I can effectively be in a position as an advocate and a prison chaplain to be able to help her. This is one of the avenues here, is getting with my good friend Leona, being able to have a voice through Shedding Light broadcast and other broadcasts that I'm in process of getting Judy on, to be able to speak about her situation, that others not only will have the awareness to know, but could be able to reach out to others.
For a moment. I apologize. I don't know the time, but I might be in trouble because I may be well past my time. What time?
Okay. Well, you go ahead, Judy. I'm going to release you off the call so that
we
don't have those issues. Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck, Judy.
Thank you, everyone, for calling in. And you all will see me soon. God's going to move, and I'm going to be free.
Well, we look forward to the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Uh-huh. So it is just my responsibility that I've...
Madeline? What happened?
Bella.
I believe she got dropped. She'll call back in again. But, Carl, do you have anything to say? You want to say anything further? Also, we have 606 and 5510.
Hello, Miss Brandau. Oh, I'm sorry. It's formal.
Leona.
Hello, Leona. Yeah. Hello, Leona. This is Joe. How are you? Joe from Montana.
Joe, have you been
listening?
What do you think about the situation with Judy's incarceration?
I've only been listening for about the last 10 minutes, but I came in at the exact same time. When you said that you would have gotten your law degree, maybe you didn't have the capacity to become a lawyer, and that's why I called in. A lot of lawyers may or may not have the capacity to be a lawyer. Lawyers are fairly bright people. However, you do have one particular quality that a lot of lawyers don't have when they started, or either was drained out of them through time. And that's your passion to get people exonerated. So that's something that lawyers need. And that's something that the defendants have to believe in. If they believe that their lawyers or fighters are really going to be there for them, especially when they know that they're innocent, it gives them a great deal of encouragement. But I just wanted to call in and let you know that, in case you ever want to go back to school, because I went back to school late myself, you can do that.
I think at my age it's kind of late for me, because I just I'm just hanging in from year to year these days. I've reached the 70s.
Okay.
But thank you for that. Judy has been incarcerated for some time, and again, her situation with her child was a traumatic situation for her as well. And then she ends up getting three life sentences, which is, to me, is ridiculous. But these are some of the things that we want to bring out, is that people need to stop stereotyping prisoners, and they need to start looking at these cases individually to see what happened in their life. There's always two sides, sometimes three sides to every story. And by the time the media gets it out there, they get it so wrong that it's already stuck in the minds of people. And before you know it, when the truth comes out, they've already got it in their minds from hearing the initial news, which was, as they say, fake news. But I think Madeline came back on. Madeline, are you on with us again?
Yeah, I was able to call back in. We got disconnected disconnected Judy.
Do you want to finish what you were saying? Because you were in the middle of something when you got cut off.
Well, it was just basically in regards to being a agent of change on behalf of the prisoners that are wrongfully convicted. I've been doing this for 27 years in the state of Missouri, and it has totally disappointed me in regards to those that are lawmakers who give their promises. Even I've talked with them one-on-one about certain things that have gone on with not just Judy case, but others, and they give a listening ear, but that's as far as it goes. I don't know if it's because they don't want to get totally involved. I've had one lawmaker tell me that she's not familiar with the criminal justice system, and she's not a lawmaker, you know, as far as legality is concerned. And I found that odd of her mentioning that to me on Facebook, by the way, in regards to Judy and some other cases I brought to her attention. But she also is sponsoring bills on behalf of inmates. And this is what was just kind of confusing for me, for her to make statement as such, but yet she's involved with the Board of Corrections, the Department of Corrections Committee. So I don't know if these lawmakers are in position, you know, for power and authority or what have you, but there really isn't no substance being given on behalf of the families that go to these individuals that are in their jurisdiction to be able to get the help that they need. And I've been instrumental in helping families go before these particular state lawmakers and U.S. representatives, but we're not getting anywhere. And that's the frustrating part, you know, that they listen out of respect, but they don't get involved. It doesn't go any further than that. And I'm sure if there's any other advocates on the phone, if they've done anything of this sort on behalf of families dealing with mass incarceration, whether it's restorative justice, criminal justice, wrongful convictions, what have you, you may find there's a pattern of practice there. You know, they'll give you a listening ear, but that's as far as it goes. You know, there's no substance behind what is being said after the meeting. And that's what I think so much needs to change. You know, we can all have our individual opinions, but until we can unite and come together, and this is conversation that's been had way before I was born, you know, with the Martin Luther Kings and others before him, you know, wanting to unify, so to speak. But for whatever reason, there's some particular spirit out there that just doesn't want the unity. It doesn't want the unity, period.
You know what I
And that's
I look
what
at
we
people,
fight against.
I look at people, Madeline, especially advocates in legislative leaders and all of this. I look at people in two ways. They're either followers or leaders. They're either strong or weak. And they're either insecure or secure. People like yourself, people like me, people like Joe that calls in, and even Steph, they call in. It's not afraid of stating your feelings and stating the facts. There's a lot of people out in the world, in this country especially, who feel that they're secure, but they can't go against their peers or their cliques. They feel like they have to fit in. And so even though they may see things as being wrong, they're going to do just the opposite because this is what their peers want, and this is where they fit in. And I feel those people are very weak. They're brought up to feel more that they need other people than they need their strength and their courage and their leadership skills. But I was going to say we have about 3 minutes left, so Madeline, I'd like to have you give the audience any information you want to give on how they can connect with you, contact you, or Judy or her family or whatever. To try to help in some way, shape, or form, either calling legislative members or writing letters or emailing or whatever the case may be.
Well, I'm very transparent. You can look me up on Facebook under Madeline Michelle Carthen, C-A-R-T-A-T-N. I'm on LinkedIn as well. I'm on Twitter under the same name, very simple, Madeline Michelle Carthen. You can Google me out there on different platforms that I've served on as far as talk shows, being in the gap for lawsuits with ACLU against Republican senators that were coming against prisoners and taking away their religious freedom. It's a lot of things that I've been very involved with when it comes to the Missouri Department of Correction and the prisoners, just being able to have a voice for them and their families. If you would like to email me on any subject matter in regards to wrongful conviction or how you can get involved, feel free to email me at Coburn Enterprise, COBURNENTERPRISE, the number 06 at gmail.com. And that'll get directly to me. Currently, right now, I'm just working with several families in regards to trying to get their stories out to producers, segment producers. With Reasonable Doubt, they're in their fifth season right now on ID Discovery Channel Network. So I've been in talks with a segment producer there, and I'm just waiting on word back about Judy and some others whose cases I submitted to them for viewing and feedback. But this is pretty much what I do. I've taken the liberty to get involved, not just as a chaplain traditionally. I go to the nine yards and beyond, you know, if need be. And that's what making sure that the right resources are given to families, as well as being able to make contact on their behalf to certain lawmakers in the state of Missouri or Congress up in D.C. if need be, and as well as even driving to Jefferson City. I've done that as well, having appointments with different state lawmakers and bringing the families up there, because it's beyond my voice. If I can just get their attention and then get the families to come in, that's what I've been pretty much doing for the last 27 years, so that they can hear from the families, you know, and not just me, myself, because it's bigger than me, you know. It's just collectively working with the families and being able to get the effective outcome that is needed. And like I said, it's not easy. You know, there's a lot of threats, phone calls that come with this situation, this journey, but being committed, I can't see myself doing anything different. And there's never been any pay involved. I don't accept monies or anything like that for any families, never have, never will. This is strictly me and what it is that I know my calling is with prison ministry, and this is what I'm passionately committed to. So if anyone wants to reach out to me, if you're trying to get information on behalf of Judy, again, just to reiterate the information in regards to the change.org website, if you go to change.org, and go to the search, just type in Judy Pickens, and you would be able to see her petition. Also, if you want to write to Judy for whatever reason, she can be written at 3151 Litton Road, that's Litton Road, Chillicothe, Missouri, that's Chilli, Cothe, Missouri, and that's 64601. Her Missouri Department of Corrections number is 119-6697, and she's in room 211, and that's bed, B as in boy. That's how you'll be able to reach her. And one last thing before I close. You can go directly to Judy Pickens' website, which is www.justice4judyp.com. And I turn it back over to you, Leona.
Okay, we're going to be closing now, but I wanted to say one thing. Judy had mentioned that they had written to some lawyers or some advocacy firms or something that they never responded. I'd like the audience or whoever's working with anybody, when they write, even if it's the incarcerated individuals themselves, when they write to these people and they get no response, I would like them to let us know on the radio show sometime, because I'd like to start getting a list of lawyers, of advocates, groups, ACLU, any other lawyers or law firms who are not responding or who are denying the help that is being requested on behalf of the incarcerated individuals. I just wanted to get that out. Madeline, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Is Brandy still on with us? Someone else is on with us. But anyway, I want to thank you so much, audience. Thank you so much for listening in. And today is Thursday. We will be having our show again next, I believe it's Tuesday. Anyone can call in to talk about anything. Madeline, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for bringing Judy Pickens on. It was very interesting hearing her story, and I really wish her well, and I thank you as always. You've been a great advocate for the wrongfully convicted, and you've been a great friend. Thank you so much. We are now
going
to call
Love you, my sister.
Thank you. We're now going to close this show, and I thank you all for listening in. Thank you.